I did not say this. I am not here.
I understand.
Father, Father, the sleeper has awakened. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is the show where we take the weirdest, oldest movies we can get our hands on through Netflix streaming and other sources, and we watch them, and we talk about them together right here on the show. My name is Scott Johnson. This is episode 32, and I'm joined today by Brian Face Boyle Zibbett.
Well, Ziggy says that there's a 92% chance you're here to mortally wound Duke Atreides and put a poison gas tooth in his mouth.
Whoa.
Man, talk about bad breath.
Yeah, no doubt, dude. That's all I can think about. That guy from 24's got terrible breath. Also joining us today from all the way in Hawaii now is Mr. Randy Sandworm Jordan. Randy, welcome.
Hey, Scott. You know, I know you're looking for a family to join, and I'd like you to consider House Harkonnen. Gladiatorial death games, hunting humans for sport, perverse sexual lust, murdering random servants, obscenely expensive luxuries, drug addiction, torture as entertainment. We've got it all.
Yes, you do. And the face boils. Don't forget that.
I'm still not trying to laugh about the sandworm.
Because you like the sandworm.
Yeah. Well, yeah. He's on the beach.
Oh, yeah. Careful. Try not to vibrate is all I'm saying. And then rounding us up today, Brian Sting Panties Dunaway. What do you got, Brian?
All right. I'm going to teach you guys how to fight like my people. All right. First, I want you to keep this big black rock. Good. Now punch it. Man, are you stupid. Now pee on it so those guys on Film Sack will finally have that on their checklist.
Yeah. Exactly. But they didn't. No one peed on it.
He didn't pee on it. He just punched it like a dummy.
Yeah, again, that's funny, that checklist item. I always thought that I thought peeing would be this most like super common thing in every movie, and we haven't had one in like since Labyrinth.
Make sure you come back to it though, because I've got a case for it in this.
Yeah, just those guys were peeing all the time. Absolutely. Right.
Oh, when they're in their suits,
you just couldn't see it. That's true.
Exactly.
All right. Well, if you don't know what we're talking about, it's time for Scott Fletcher to enter the room, take off his pants, and say this.
Dune. In the year 10,191, the world is at war for control of the desert planet Dune, the only place where the time travel substance Spice can be found. But when one leader gives up control, it's only so he can stage a coup with some unsavory characters. Frank Herbert's popular sci-fi novel gets mesmerizing treatment from director David Lynch, who casts Kyle MacLachlan as the protagonist Paul Atreides. Nerds. And rock musician Sting as the villainous Fade.
All right, so it gave second billing kind of to Sting there in that description, which is kind of funny because he didn't really play that big of a role in the movie, at least not in the theatrical cut.
No, but I remember that was a big draw for me to see the movie. Because I hadn't read the books, and George and I won tickets on the radio, but I was like, oh, yeah, I really want to see that because Sting is in it. And then he was barely in it.
Yeah, he wasn't hardly in it. That's enough to wear that weird winged G-string unit thing that he had on, which was great.
Yeah, those metallic Van Halen underoos.
Yeah, great.
They're totally Van Halen logo. I didn't even think of that. Very nice catch. It's good having the music perspective on the show because you can really pull that crap out of there.
So you won on the radio tickets to see that?
Yeah. Yeah, we saw it opening night.
Yeah, remember radio, Brian? This is a hot thing.
Did you have to like answer some kind of Sting trivia question to get that?
I'm sure we had to do something. Yeah, I'm sure it was like 10th caller or answer this trivia question. I'm sure it was Sting related because he was, you know, that would be the big reason to give tickets away on the radio to a sci-fi movie if there's a music connection. I couldn't tell you for the life of me what the question was or what we had to do to win them. But
I just can see this so well. So you said it was you and who?
Oh, my Uncle George.
Oh, okay.
He's the guy who got me into all the music. Yes, that's right. Yeah, no, you would do the voice there, Scott?
No.
Yeah, you want to.
I'm not pulling that one out just yet. But that's interesting. So the year was 1984. Once again, let's just make another notch in our belt for another major movie, like it or not, a major release in the year of 1984. Crazy year for movies.
Indeed.
And Dune was among them. I don't think it was among the best, but it was among them nonetheless.
Wow, you're so stupid.
Now, as we mentioned, directed by David Lynch, Lord of Crazy. He's the weirdest guy I've ever seen. I told you guys before the show, and I'll tell the listeners now, after this ended, I decided to watch Mulholland Drive, because it's one of the David Lynch movies that I'd heard was good, and I thought, okay, I'll check it out, whatever. Previous to this, my David Lynch viewings have been Dune back in the day, and now again, the one with the old guy on the mower tractor that goes across the country.
Oh yeah, Straight Story.
Straight Story, rated G, awesome, great movie. Not that rated G has anything to do with it, but it's weird for him to have a rated G movie that doesn't have lesbian sex or something in it. and Eraserhead, and that's it. I've not seen any. Oh, and Elephant Man.
Elephant Man, yeah.
No, so I like 6 or 7. I've seen anything. So yeah.
But the things like I haven't seen Blue Velvet. I haven't seen Lost Highway. I haven't seen any of these other sort of modern era versions of the David Lynch vision. Mm-hmm. After watching Mulholland Drive, I'm come to the conclusion that he's really freaking nuts. Like he's crazy. He's totally crazy. And while he distanced himself from this movie in a pretty big way, in a way, I kind of think they were maybe better off having him kind of distance himself, because I think if he'd have really had his way, this would have been some weird ass crap. Mm-hmm. So I want to throw this to Randy. Are you a Lynch fan? And if so, where is he strong, and is this where he's weakest? Like, where do you stand on the
Lynch? I'm not a Lynch fan. I don't think that David Lynch is... I think he barely gets into the category of auteur, and it's only because he's like John Waters with money. You know, like, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
If David Lynch had to actually wrestle a great scene out of a couple of actors and a simple set, I don't think he deserves to be on a list with like Martin Scorsese and Soderbergh and the Coens and you know, Errol Morris and so forth.
He's often placed there though, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's often placed above those people, which I just don't even, I don't hold with. That's, I'm not hating on David Lynch. I've watched his movies. I think the ultimate description of him is John Waters with a better budget. Like, he doesn't get incredible performances. Dune is the best example of how, wow, he doesn't get better performances. I almost wonder if he was really on set for a lot of these the scenes in this film.
It felt like two directors to me. It felt like two dudes were in charge, and there was a little bit of that Lynch stuff with like face boils and weird statues and strange shots that lingered way too long and things like that. And then there were other parts that felt very standard, you know, phoning it in kind of direction, and I could never really kind of put my finger on why it felt that way, and maybe there was some of that going on. I mean, he speaks of it as the worst time of his life.
Yeah.
He says it's the single worst thing he ever did, and honestly, you know, the things that are Lynchian to me are like the guild dude with the big vagina lips thing face.
Oh god, that's awful. But that's not the alien. That's not the director's fault on that part. That was just freaky.
It was totally freaky. Go ahead.
I'd consider myself a little bit more of a David Lynch fan than Randy. I mean, I was a big fan of Twin Peaks. The first year of Twin Peaks, I loved. And Wild at Heart, I wouldn't put it up there as one of my 50 favorite movies, but I did enjoy that. And I think the weirdness. I love Randy's description about him being, you know, John Waters with a bigger budget. I'd almost say he's a Tim Burton that doesn't care if he pleases the audience or not.
Mm.
You know,
he doesn't have the whimsical fun of Tim Burton at all.
No, not at all.
And yeah, he's depressed.
And that's what I mean by caring about pleasing the audience. I mean, I think Tim Burton does a little bit of, you know, stuff that entertains himself, and the rest is for the audience. I feel like David Lynch does things that are entertaining to him, and who cares if the rest of the if the audience actually enjoys it?
Yeah, I'm more excited to see him get
the start
old
of Team Bibbit, because Yeah. Going with Bynum.
Oh, look at you. I don't know where I'm going to hold my judgment till the end, because there were some things that I actually really enjoyed and there were some things I didn't. A little more background. Frank Herbert wrote the novel, of course. Oh, and by the way, so I'd never read the Dune books in any kind of completion. So the movie was all I had growing up to know what the Dune world is about. And the video game. I played a lot of the Genesis version of Dune. Great game.
Yeah, which is spot on.
Oh, I love that game. It's the original RTS, man. The rest of them owe their souls to that game. But anyway, I didn't do that a lot. But this movie, and knowing it was coming, inspired me to start reading the books. And I'm a pretty decent way in the first book now. Then I watched the movie, and it was interesting to see what pieces. It was mostly like lines, like occasionally a line would be spoken. So Patrick Stewart's in this movie, and he would say a line, and I go, oh, I just read that. But then there'd be all this gobbledygook in the middle that wasn't even in the book, or they skipped over huge swaths of story, like movies from books do. I understand that, and I'm not here. You know, that's an old argument that doesn't have an ending to it, but... But the way it struck me was just, you know, what David Lynch did is he said, all right, I'm going to hire H.R. Giger to do production design. So he's going to come in here and everything's going to look like Aliens. And while we're at it, I'm going to do all my weird crap that I do. And the producers are going to be pissed and they're going to want me to, dial it back a little bit. And the only real semblance to Dune is there'll be a planet full of sand, a bunch of giant worms, and occasionally we'll throw some lines in. That's kind of how it feels so far. Now, I haven't finished the book, first book, but... I'm getting there, and I plan to get through them all. I'm even going to read his son's books. I'm going to read all that crap.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm going to go nuts with it. Because
I'm going to join you with that, Scott, because I actually had Dune on my bookshelf forever, and I've started reading it a couple of times, just the first couple of chapters, but I get really hung up when we start using a lot of family names and stuff and planet names that are really weird to pronounce and stuff, and I just start trudging through it.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. I'm going to try to... get past that, and I'm going to read the series.
I mean, it's considered one of the great epics of our history. It's supposed to be, it's Lord of the Rings-ish in scope and quality and depth and all that stuff. At least that's what, many...
Speaking of Lord of the Rings, I think, man, can you imagine this in the hands of Peter Jackson?
Oh, dude.
Because I kept thinking about Lord of the Rings when I was watching this. I kept going, man, it was almost there. I mean, there are some things in here that just look like... I don't know.
The giant worm scenes could have been amazing given today's technology. There's a lot of stuff that I think could improve it, but they are working. They're supposedly pitching around a remake, so we'll see if any of that happens.
Of course they are, because it's on FilmSack.
Yeah, that's we determine if that happens or not. Okay, moving on. So David Lynch wrote the screenplay. Some of the people of note in the movie, we mentioned Kyle MacLachlan. Kyle MacLachlan, who's in like all the David Lynch movies, pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah.
Which is weird. I don't know. This was his first directorial job with him, and there was obviously something about that relationship that went on past this. So despite his hatred for the movie, he's got his little manservant Kyle running around with him everywhere. Kyle, fetch me my weird freaking camera so I can make a weird movie.
Kyle, would you like to be in another movie?
Oh, please, no. Sir, please. I would love to be in another film.
What are you doing? About? You're not watching a movie on your iPod, are you?
Oh, in this one, I get to have sex with a goat in the middle of a freeway? I'm in. Anyway, Brad Dourif, speaking of Lord of the Rings, he is the he played Wormtongue in Lord of the Rings, which is great. He's also the Doctor in the much-loved...
Desperate?
No, Deadwood. Close.
Deadwood.
Desperate. Desperate. Yeah, Desperate Housewives, that one doctor.
Yeah.
I love Brad Dourif. I'm a huge... am I even saying his name right? Dourif? I always defer probably to Randy on this. Randy,
that's probably right. Okay. That sounds right.
Randy's good with the names. I can't think of a thing where I didn't enjoy him in it. Other folks like Linda Hunt, Jose Ferrer. No one knows who that is. Other ones of note. Oh, Virginia Madsen, our second viewing of her. Yeah, exactly. She was not since Candyman. Candyman, yep. Say it one more time. One more time.
Candyman. you almost got me.
Still doesn't work. Anyway, she played Princess Irulan, otherwise known as voiceover narration, which, by the way, the book has. So to their credit.
Oh, the books, all the books with tons of it. This movie had to have that, and I was really surprised to find out that Lynch was originally angling to not have a lot of voiceover, flashback type stuff.
Yeah,
but, it's one thing filmmakers try to avoid is
well, and he was right, and he should have, and he should have held his ground, and he should have bought out the film or something, because this film has so much in the head of the thinking person dialogue that it made me want to throw the movie at the wall.
Like, really?
Yeah.
How many times do you need to show me something and also tell me without moving your lips that you're seeing what I, the audience, am seeing? Am I? Do you really think I'm that stupid?
No, I am with Randy on this. I vote for your stance 100,000%. It's a mistake. And the book isn't really even that much like this. The book has Princess Aurelian always going, in the 4,000th year of the reign of the House of the Blah. She does that all the time. And so her stuff, okay, fine, whatever. But when they would just be panning around and McLaughlin would say, but mother, when did we travel to the thing? And then he would go, yeah, there's a...
Man,
like a
mom's
freaking...
hot.
My mother's
she raised
kind of
her hot. Eyebrow. I wonder what's up.
Yeah, that's a terrible choice. And the book isn't like that. The book doesn't... I mean, yes, the book has kind of an omni focus on different people. Like, it's not just third person or one protagonist view of everything. It's not Harry Potter, but it's, you know, so they definitely say, and he thought this while he was wondering about the thing. They tried to literally translate that, and that was bad. So bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I kind of dug it.
I'm sorry to say, Scott, if you're going to read the whole series, you're going to deal with chapters of that. I mean, and I'm not kidding you, literally whole chapters in somebody's head while he says, you know, I, Baron Vladimir Harkonnen, have decided that I will, you know, and he's not talking to anyone. He's walking down a hallway.
It's all in his head.
Yeah.
I've decided I will float and pop my zits. who else? So Virginia Madsen looked really cute. She's probably pretty young.
Oh, she did, yeah.
Probably 19 or 20 there.
Sean Young.
Oh, yeah, Sean Young. Oh, okay, so this is interesting. A little bit of trivia for you. The movie was originally going to be helmed by director Ridley Scott, who left the production after his older brother suddenly passed away. Not Tony Scott, the other director, but the older brother. I don't know what his name was. Anyway, he wanted to start working as soon as possible, but Dune would take far too long to reach production, so he decided to leave the project in favor of Blade Runner in 82, which was ready to start production immediately. I'm guessing he's glad he made that move. However, I would have liked to have seen a Ridley Scott Dune take.
Oh, yeah.
Totally.
I just got to make the argument that I don't think you could put anyone in that position and they could have overcome Dino De Laurentiis's angle. I don't think that Steven Spielberg could have, unless he just bought out the entire production and then took control. The way I read it, Dino De Laurentiis was going to make a bad film and nothing was going to stop him.
Yeah, it certainly seemed that way from all the descriptions I've read. And there are people that don't like him very much. Like, people aren't fans of Dino De Laurentiis. Not just because he sounds like a fashion designer. Is he actually?
Yeah.
He's not, is he? Because it sounds like one of those dudes. It's like, oh, yes, at the runway today, we saw Dino De Laurentiis walking around
wearing?
In Dune clothes.
I'm wearing a De Laurentiis.
Walking around in a, what was it called, a still suit? Yeah.
Right, yeah, still suit.
Good times. Anyway, thank you for Blade Runner. That's one that is definitely on my list for Film Sack, by the way. That's currently streaming in the theatrical form, which is the one I'd prefer because that has the voiceover. Speaking of voiceover, that's the one Ridley Scott threw a big canary about and in the director's cut removed all of Harrison Ford's voiceover, which is probably okay because there were parts where he said, my ship can do 40 parsecs in 12 minutes.
I can't wait to fight you on that, by the way.
Really? All right.
Yes.
I look forward to that. In other trivia, the success of the novel, which attempts to adapt film or adapted to this film as early as 71, a lengthy process of development hell followed through the 70s. So for a long time, people were working on this, during which time Arthur P. Jacobs, Alexandro Jabberowski, what a terrible name, go to the courthouse, $50, you got a new name. And Ridley Scott, as I mentioned, they all tried to bring their vision to the screen. In 81, Lynch was hired as director by Dino De Laurentiis, and much hilarity ensued. 200 workers spent 2 months hand cleaning and clearing, or just clearing, 3 square miles of Mexican desert for location shooting.
Yeah, get out of here now. Go on. Yeah.
Get out of here. Let the white man film their movie.
It's really sad that they, before they started clearing it, it was actually a lovely mountainside.
Oh, dude. I'm sure it was, actually. Now it's a giant wormhole.
Right.
The tendons visible when Paul hooks the worm were made of condoms. Just wanted to throw that in there. Yeah, some scenes were filmed in the same location at the same time as scenes of Conan of the Destroyer, which came out in 84. So these guys were sharing production locations with Conan.
I bet that was uncomfortable.
Probably. And there was no Bridget Nielsen around yet.
What the hell is this?
What is this?
What are all these condoms doing on the ground?
Condoms. Giant worms.
I throw mine away.
I'm going to punch you, all you nerds in the face.
All you nerds. Nothing but nerds on the set of Dune, for sure. The name Judas Booth that appears as the screenwriter in the extended TV cut is a combination of Judas.
Extended TV cut.
Yeah, the Judas is obviously for the apostle that portrayed Jesus. And then John Wilkes Booth is the Booth part, Abraham Lincoln's killer. This is sort of an in-joke that David Lynch put in there to basically say that the studio and the production betrayed him and killed the film.
That guy.
What a joker.
Now, see, I don't take that very, very seriously because David Lynch worked for or with Dino De Laurentiis on Blue Velvet just 2 years later. You know, so I don't think there was some big gang war going on over this film.
But there could have been a like, all right, remember that last time? That totally sucked. I want more control. This is my movie. Stand back. I promise it'll be good. And De Laurenti said, it is no problem. I'm making a new line of clothes for women anyway. So you're probably right.
Yeah.
David Lynch turned down the chance to direct Star Wars Episode VI, Return of the Jedi, to direct Dune. So he skipped that to make Dune.
Dodged a bullet there.
We all dodged a bullet there, dude.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
How weird would Return of the Jedi have been?
What, we got puppets? Sweet.
Well, I mean, David Lynch was still a bit of an unknown quantity because, you know, I mean, even the, like, look at THX. That is a film that you know, George Lucas did coming out of film school that is still pretty freaking weird. Like, it's not in his normal, not in his, the pantheon of the Star Wars look and feel. It's definitely a more strange-edged, weird thing. I'll bet those guys got along great. I'll bet David Lynch was young and looking like the dude coming up through the ranks. He'd be perfect to do, you know, my movie. But I think it would have been a huge mistake.
Maybe Lynch lost his mind doing this movie.
Could have been.
I think the inevitable scene where Luke and Leia hook up would have been very interesting.
Oh, my gosh, dude.
And Kenny Baker would crawl out of the R2-D2 suit and start dancing in reverse.
Yes, and that is not in Kenny Baker's contract. He will not do that.
No.
All right, so let's start talking about the movie itself, the movie proper. My favorite things in the movie were Linda Hunt, who had a small part as... Oh, and the name escapes me, and I don't have it up on here.
Shut up, Mapes.
Lady.
Shut up, Mapes.
I like saying, shut up, Mapes.
Shut up, Mapes.
Been yelling at my kids all day. Shut up, Mapes.
Which the book actually gives her name some meaning, like that name means servant of the highborn, something, blah, you know, whatever. Dune lore. It's a bunch of Dune lore.
Okay, so why do we, I don't want to answer this question, so I'm going to ask the question. Why do we like Linda Hunt?
Oh, I love Linda Hunt. She's on that list. I told you guys before the show, and I'll say it again. She's on that list of actors / actresses I'll see in anything. She's the voice of... She has one of the coolest voices in the world. She does the voice of the...
Incredibles?
No, that's them making... basically referencing her, but that's not her. That's Brad that's Bird doing a voice. No.
Really?
But it's obviously based on her, for sure.
No, that's Brad Bird doing that voice.
Yeah. Jeez, what, do you not watch your director commentaries, you slacker? Get on it, man.
That movie was stupid.
I'm going to tie your testicles to a post and then pull you away fast.
Did you just say testicles?
Yes, I did. I said testicles. So Linda Hunt is in, she's the voice of Kratos, sorry. She's the narrator on all of the God of War games, which makes those games more epic than they would be normally. She is really great in Silverado. She plays the lady that runs the bar. She's great, and she won an Oscar for The Year of Living Dangerously with Mel Gibson and others. Speaking of Errol Morris, who directed that and wrote that. And then what was the other one? Crap. See, this is the thing. Ibn and I were talking earlier before the show started. We can never remember what else she's in because, honestly, she's not in that much. But her diminutive form, her little weird body, and her kind of strange face and the way she talks and carries herself is fascinating to watch for me.
Yeah.
And she was really underused in this movie.
I'm going to tell you, when I was in high school, okay.
You had a
Linda
crush.
Hunt
oh.
is
oh my
the
God,
doppelganger.
I was in high school.
Linda Hunt is the doppelganger embodiment twin of my sophomore high school English teacher, who was known for teaching English by beating it into you. And I just think, I don't know, she is so entertaining because I endured a year of living under the lash of her twin sister.
Wow.
Are you sure you're not reliving Kindergarten Cop? Because she was the principal in that.
Oh, yeah, that's the other thing she's in.
Are you sure that's, you're just not imagining that?
It's not a tumor.
I hate to say, I other than having heard that one line many, many times, I've never seen Kindergarten Cop.
Oh, honestly. You may have a film sack commentary track.
You
I smell
watch
it coming.
Kindergarten Cop. Yeah. I mean, that's just classic.
Look, here's
I've seen every Schwarzenegger film except that one for some reason.
I enjoy that. You've seen Twins then? Twins is terrible.
Yes, a couple of times.
That's Twins great.
Twins is fine.
Have you seen the Christmas one where he's stealing the Cabbage Patch
Kid
from Sinbad?
Yes. Yeah. Jingle All the Way. Yeah. Yeah.
Sinbad.
Schwarzenegger can do no wrong.
Yeah, he can. He can do plenty wrong.
Yeah.
He can't run a state, but he can't do any movie wrong.
Dude, that's a hell of a state to run. I think he's doing okay for what he's got. But anyway, I'm sorry. I'll have it in my head. I'm picturing Randy having some woman over Randy's table saying, "You will put the apostrophe in the proper place or I will kill you."
No, that's exactly – her name was Miss Schaefer. Miss Schaefer.
Yeah.
And, oh, man, I still have nightmares.
Wow.
She was Mutta in Popeye.
No, she wasn't.
She was Popeye's mother, yeah.
No.
Yeah,
no, Mutta.
Not,
she was.
That is not her. I Ms. guarantee Oxtuck you that is Mutta. Not Linda Hunt. To the internet.
That's what IMDb says.
It does?
Yeah, yeah. Her first role.
What? Yeah.
First role they list for.
I love Popeye, the movie, the live action movie. Oh, I'm glad they give you a...
She seems so older-ish to be... To that been her one of her first performances.
Older-ish? Okay, older-ish. Wait. I'm looking this up. Hold on.
You know, we still haven't finished naming everyone in the film.
I
and
know.
You haven't gotten to two really awesome actors.
She's not in this.
Yes, she is.
I'm looking right now. There's no Linda Hunt in the film.
Oh,
Popeye.
Don't go to Popeye. Go look up Linda Hunt.
Oh, you're right.
Jeez,
you're right.
You'll have to scroll because she's only in Popeye for like 5 seconds.
No, you're right. Sorry, my bad. I do not remember that, but I watched that movie over and over and over. Yeah. Directed by Robert Altman, by the way. Weird.
Yes. Awesome. Yeah, talk about your weird director choices.
Yeah,
for
it's
that,
strange
too.
Choice, but I was a big fan. I liked it. Okay, anyway, back to this. Then a whole bunch of other people, but let's talk about the one I care about the most, which is the guy that played the father of Paul. And still, by the way, reading the book, it's not helping me. I thought maybe the book would help me to not think Paul is a stupid name for any character in anything. And I'm not, no offense to Paul's out there.
Right, where you've got, you know, names like Stilgar and Irulan and you know.
Yeah, and there's Paul and Jessica. Paul. It's like, what? Come on. It's not going to be Paul.
But if you look at it from his writing perspective, it's that he started out using a bunch of Christian names, and then as he introduces more and more characters, the names get more and more clever.
Yeah.
Like,
clever?
It's almost, well, okay, more and more complicated. Yeah. So it's almost like Frank Herbert started writing the book when he was 7 years old and it took him 20 years to write it, you know?
May have.
When he started, he thought Paul sounded like a great idea, and by the end he's like, I probably should have gone with Dingus.
Let's face it, they gave him like what, 3 other names?
Yeah.
In the movie. So yeah. I mean, come on. I mean, he had to have at least one normal name.
Yeah, I guess that's
to ground it.
It's a fair point. Anyway, I just thought that was dumb. It's like Scott or Brian. It's dumb. It's a dumb name for a protagonist in a book. Now, Frank Herbert's a cool name, but not for a science fiction movie, so I'm glad he didn't use his own name.
Yeah.
Anyway, I like the guy who played his... My point I was trying to get to is the guy who played his dad, who... It was the characters called... Where is it?
Duke. Is the Duke.
The Duke.
But
Guido.
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 Guido the Duke. He was played by this German actor... Who I think is just awesome. And why can't I find his name? Oh, there it is right there.
Jürgen Prochnow.
Jürgen Prochnow. He was most recently in 24, last season of 24, and played a Russian sort of mob boss. The guy has been in a million movies where they need a European-looking sounding dude to be a bad guy.
Yeah.
And he steps up to the
plate.
Got
a great voice, too. He's done some video game stuff, too.
Yeah. So there you go. Let's do some clips, and then we'll start talking about in between things we liked. Well, I wrote down the word floating cringe. Oh, ooh. Floating syringe. Sorry. I really like my misspelling of floating syringe. I thought those were really cool.
You like the floating syringe?
I did. I thought it was great. It was stupid, but I mean, you're right. But they're like clockwork, and I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. I can see that.
Yeah, I kind of like those. All right. And the hazmat super soldiers with the green faces. That was kind of cool. But they were like just in cheap hazmat suits. And right. Picard's mullet. But I could go on.
Speaking of tech, mustache, man.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Rocking it.
Speaking of tech, I'd love to be the guy who had a mop up after the alien number one that has the vagina face.
Yeah.
He slimes out of there.
Dude, Brian, that's a good transition because I happen to have my first clip is that dude.
Is a vagina face.
I think so.
Disgusting.
Oh, so we're talking about the scene where the Emperor is approached by one of the incredibly powerful pilots of the Pilots Guild and told that he's got to, you know, clean up. And so the Emperor has to face the guy alone, and we finally get to see what these horribly disfigured pilots look like.
Yeah.
They were neat when they were coming in, their big retro train looking.
Yeah, their big steampunk train thing. That was great. This is the stuff I felt like held up and was still cool.
Yeah. Right, except for the fact that for some reason in his big posse of guys in black suits, there's a couple of boys with vacuum cleaners, you know.
Exactly. Like, exactly. Vacuum stuff around. Even stuff that doesn't need to be vacuumed.
It's don't like, you oh, wish all your house guests showed up like that?
Yeah, dude. No
followed you around, sucking up the trash you drop. Yeah.
Yeah. The slime they left behind when they were leaving, they had some guy mopping that up.
Yes.
I think this is that clip. I think it is. Yeah. I labeled it Vagina Man Sees Plans Within Plans. So... You know where my mind was as I was capturing this clip. But here he is talking to King, whatever his crap name.
We have just folded space from X.
Yes. How was your journey?
Many machines on X. New machines.
Oh? Yes.
Better than those on Riches. You are transparent. I see many things. I see plans within plans.
Okay, I like that stuff.
That stuff is fantastic, except for the very first... Well, I'll take it back. I would love to walk into a room and look at people and go, I just folded space. And here I am.
Go ahead.
How would you feel about floating into a room as a big balloon with little tiny shriveled arms and legs and a vagina mouth?
Yeah. How would you feel about that? I'd feel pretty good about seeing Brian like that.
Yeah. Well, as long as I had, you know, an army of people, what kind of power does this guy have? I kept waiting for the power.
Well, here's what I
can fold space.
This is my question. Are these space, used to be human, right? Because in the books they say, oh yeah, these guys are totally like non-human anymore, but they used to be. And they're this way from all this space folding. But do I have that right?
No, they're this way from all of the spice use, the spice abuse. They live in a cloud of spice in their little containers. You know?
Oh, that's why they're puffing out the orange spice or the red spice. Right. smiley spice. I'm thinking of the Spice Girls all of a sudden.
Red spice, I know it.
Red
spice. Was there any old spice involved? Waka waka.
Waka waka. Speaking of the spice, there's a clip about the very spice.
A beginning is a very delicate time. Know then that it is the year 10,191. The known universe is ruled by the Padishah Emperor Shaddam IV, my father. In this time, the most precious substance in the universe is the spice melange. The spice extends life. The spice expands consciousness. The spice is vital to space travel.
The spice is, and she then it goes on to say, I forgot, I cut this out. She goes on to say, in roughly 10 years, I will show my boobs in a tub while making Candyman leave me alone.
This scene cracked me up so much because she would go on and it was like, oh, that was really cool exposition and setup. And then her face was,
she fades
the
out.
Only thing, yeah, she fades out because all I can see is her face in space.
Right.
And it just kind of like fades out, and you're like, okay, that's done now. Okay, we're going to the next scene. No, then it like it comes back in again, and it's like, what a crap.
Yes. Oh, one more thing.
Yeah.
The
oh,
spice yes, one tastes more thing. Great on hamburgers.
See, that off that felt very David Lynchian to me.
Yeah.
Like that was his idea.
All right. Okay. I want you to fade out here.
Yeah.
I would like to have a nickel for every time a college student has written an essay on how the spice is the allegory for OPEC the gold rush or whatever. Like it's probably the most clear cut trope in the entire story, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, it's definitely got to do with oil. I mean, cause they even talk about a jihad.
And the book goes into that more too. The book so far, it starts talking about this jihad. Now, and one of the things I actually like about the book is it talks about they talk about it like a Catholic gold Bible in their history that, said thou shalt not make machines that can mimic man or something. So they have all this like it's one of the things I like, and I'll pretend that Paul is part of this, the name Paul, like somehow they pulled that out of the history, but you know what I mean? It's like they're saying, okay, well, here's all this old stuff, it's 10,000 years in the future, some of that culture, some of those pieces of civilization eke through the time, and they're still part of what they do, even though it's almost unrecognizable. I like that. It makes it feel timeless. It makes it feel like a story that wasn't written in the 60s to me.
Totally not.
Yeah. So I'm okay with that, except the Paul part.
do you think they had a big Y10K issue when they switched over the years from 4 digits to 5? Holy cow.
They were afraid everybody would be turned into giant throbbing vagina faces, and it turns out they were right. Yeah, they were right.
So, I had trouble taking those guys serious.
I liked him. When he was talking to the dude, I thought that was mysterious and cool and trippy and weird. They got dumber later on.
Yeah.
And I also don't know what they had that one out there doing. It was kind of like shooting lasers out of its head at stuff.
Yeah, you're talking about the one where he was folding, they were showing him fold space.
Is that what that was?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. It wasn't very clear.
Weird. That's what I was thinking too.
Yeah, it wasn't very clear. That reminded me of Eraserhead, that whole segment.
That was the scene that could have been the best in the film. Where up to that point, you're wondering, wow, how do they make a ship, you know, disappear in one spot and appear in another all the way across the galaxy? And they finally show you, you know, that we've gotten into the ship, we've docked with the ship with all these hundreds of other taxis, and we're all in there, and we're ready to go, and we go to the pilot, and he's about to fold space, and what do we get? Crappy early 1980s Atari graphics.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty sad, pretty disappointing. And plus, I didn't get it. Like, you guys telling me that now is the first I understood that that's... I was just like, what's this light show in the middle of the movie about? Let's go back to floating Zithead and let's see what he's up to.
If they had used some go motion here, I mean...
bringing back the go motion. They didn't have it yet. But anyway, so I also don't like the name of the spice. Melange. Hey, let's have it. You got a bucket of melange. Let's party. It just seems like a stupid name.
Well, that's the reason why they usually call it spice.
Well, in the book they say melange like every 5 minutes.
Oh, and, really?
Yeah, it makes me want to find a Frenchman and kick him in the nuts.
Oh, melange.
That is a spicy melange. Anyway, all right, we did Vagina Man, right? Yeah, we did. Patrick Stewart, his first lines in the film. This is, let's see, how many years? 87 was Next Gen's pilot, so I'm thinking this is like 4 or 5 years before that. Looking pretty good, looking young.
Will there be a Star Trek connection in this one?
Well, I think he might be the one.
There's actually two.
There's actually more than two. What's your second one? Well, no, wait, save for the thing.
Okay.
Look at us getting ahead of ourselves. This is Patrick Stewart talking about mood.
Shield practice. Gurney, we had practice this morning. I'm not in the mood.
Not in the mood. Mood's a thing for cattle and love play, not fighting.
I'm sorry, Gurney.
Not sorry enough.
Okay, those cool shield things, which aren't that
Tron-ish.
Cool.
Totally Tron-ish.
Yeah, they were Tron-ish, but they were also... they're actually based on the Tron tech, actually.
Yeah,
the stuff they did in Tron, very similar. So,
oh really? I didn't know that. I just thought it looked Tron-ish. I was like, what a weird suit.
That line about mood is taken straight from the book, but then they didn't fight right after.
How dare they?
Yeah,
not in the mood.
Not in the mood. Number one, take us to warp 5.
I actually did like the shield. The effect of the shield. It kind of had a.
Did you really?
yeah, kind of a bizarre two-dimensional and three-dimensional. You know, it was like 2D to look like 3D, and I thought
it looks away.
Well, yeah, and I'm gonna stick with my teammate here. It was bad, but the interesting thing of like Frank Herbert, this isn't just like the greatest sci-fi book of all time for nothing. He was really, I mean, it was really impressive that he thought of this idea of a shield that you could still move through really slowly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like it would take forever for something to penetrate it or get through it. And I you know, the concept is cool. I just think it's, you know, it's the 80s. It's hard to pull that crap off. But it was fun to see Picard wrapped in 3D box, you know, jumping around.
Could you see him in that? Because I couldn't see anything. All I saw was
mood prism. Is for love play, he liked to say. Which I like. All right. Moving on. Let's do another clip. This is Paul dreaming in Shatner. So you'll know what I mean when you hear it. But this is as if Paul was the supposed 15-year-old Paul, by the way. The book is supposed to be, yeah. He's supposed to be 15. This is him dreaming in Shatner language, and you'll get what I mean.
Arrakis, Dune, desert planet, moving.
Desert planet, spice, get us some out. Get to the planet. Anyway, I like that.
Yeah, that was very Shatner-esque.
It reminded me of Shatner a little bit. How do we feel about McLaughlin's portrayal of anything in this movie? Because I thought he was absolutely horrible.
I thought it was all right. I wasn't turned off by it or nothing.
Mm. Yeah, he was, you know, he was a little old for the role, but they just made the role older. He's a little wooden, but the role is wooden. I mean, Scott, you're reading the book. You get how Paul is kind of stiff.
Yeah, he's pretty stiff. Stiff Paul. That's they called him in high school. Stiff Paul. Old Stiff Paul. So did you, I guess, how do we feel about him in general? Like, I think he's okay as an actor. I've seen him in lots of things.
He's better in Desperate Housewives. Yeah.
Oh, is he on Desperate Housewives? Is he on there? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was Bree's husband for a while.
Brian Faceboil's Dunaway. Why are you watching Desperate Housewives? What
I'm not
the
watching
hell
it. It's in the freaking Wikipedia.
Oh, all right.
I'm a nerd.
I watched Desperate Housewives, but I went to school with Eva Longoria, and I have to tune in and support her.
Wow.
The thing that blew my mind about that age thing is that it's not just this. There is so much Dawson casting going on in this movie, in the new miniseries, you know, the newer sci-fi miniseries. Like the book specifically says that the Sting character and the Kyle MacLachlan character are supposed to be 15 years old.
Oh,
both of them.
Yeah, that's right. He's young. But so is the Brad Dourif character, and so is the nephew, you know, dude from the Boyle guy. He's supposed to be young. He's supposed to be
well,
like 10
this,
or 12.
This kind of goes back to, okay, let's try that. Okay, now what we got? Well, we got the new Star Wars movies with Anakin. Do we really want kids
in
sci-fi movies like
that?
Yeah,
but are you making the case that there isn't a such thing as a good 15-year-old actor with
I'm
Robert
not Smith? Saying there's not, but I don't think with this particular film that...
The Harry Peter kids do okay. They're all right.
Harry Peter kids.
My God.
They're okay, and so is, you know, Dakota Fanning. You can pull her out and do something with her.
I could have seen that, but I don't know. I just... It wouldn't have been...
Not everyone is that Anakin turd, because that kid was the worst freaking casting ever in the history of the world.
Mannequin.
You know, I was thinking I'd hire my friend's stupid son who can't act.
I'll tell you what is creepy, that little his little freaking sister.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, dude. I've got a great clip from her coming up.
God.
Oh, she's my favorite thing, I think.
I think so, too. I'm going to agree with that.
All right, moving on. Put your hand in the box.
My birthday's coming.
What
the hell?
Put your hand in the box, Brian. Put your hand in the box.
You see this? Put your right hand in the box.
What's in the box?
Pain. Stop. Put your hand in the box.
Yeah, Judy Dench sound alike. Put your hand in the box.
That's true.
Did you think
I'm not putting my hand in no box? Get out of here.
Cold
witch.
Cooked spaghetti. Hard boiled eggs.
Peeled grapes.
Oh my gosh.
Jello.
Put your hand in the box, Paul. How stiff are you now?
One of the most memorable scenes from the book, and they tried to make it scary in the movie by giving him the vision of what he was feeling.
Yeah.
And it just, instead, it just, it becomes bad, you know, Saw for camp.
Yeah, totally, yeah. Totally. I felt like the book's description of that was much, much better.
I think that's something you have to leave to the imagination. I think just looking at his face probably would have been better.
It would have been. That's the thing. Stuff, the worst thing in movies aren't the ones with the bloody gore. They're the ones that you can't see. You get cut away right when you know that horrible thing happened. Your imagination's a billion times worse. So just do that for me. I'll buy Kyle MacLachlan pretending he's 15 with a hand in an old lady's box. Sure.
Yeah.
That sounds terrible.
What do you fill in this box? Well, I don't believe there's a back to this box. Oh, my God.
I said all that wrong. I didn't mean it to sound the way it sounded. Brad Dourif steps up to the plate and does a bunch of mumbo-jumbo talk in the way he knows how.
My lord.
Paida!
Paida!
The Atreides will be leaving Caladan soon, Baron, and I have here your answer from Duke Leto.
What does Leto say, Paida?
He wishes to inform you that vendetta, as he puts it using the ancient tongue, the art of Canley is still alive. He does not wish to meet or speak with you.
I made my peace gesture. The forms of Canley have been obeyed! Bring in Fade and Raban!
And keep sucking the pus out of my face. Now I hear that...
Is he not like John Malkovich or what?
Who? Oh, yeah.
It is Brad Dourif's reading of that line. Yeah,
yeah, that's true. He reminded me a lot of him in general, actually. That's funny you'd say that. I think he would make a great... I'm going to make a bet.
Being John Malkovich.
I'm going to make a bet. I'll bet you John Malkovich plays somebody in the Dune remake. I'll bet you right now. Great. I don't know who. I'm not saying it's even this character. I'm just saying that guy's head is perfect for a damn Dune movie.
It is.
He should be in it. I know he's getting old, but I'm just saying.
He's got to have those big bushy eyebrows.
Yeah. He could be a sandworm.
For sure.
He could be a sandworm.
being a sandworm with John Malkovich.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, so there's that. I like that scene. I liked all that stuff when it happened on that planet. That was what I looked forward to the most. I thought the Vladimir Dube was great. By the way, the book, he's not nearly as crazy, and the Boyle stuff, I don't know where that's coming from yet. Maybe I'm not far enough in, but he seems more regal and normal, the Baron, in the book.
Yeah.
He's not this floating freak with, like, zits and boils.
You got to admit, though, that you can't tell me that you didn't laugh when he was laughing and flying around in his little suit. Oh, God. That was killing me.
I liked it. I thought he was great.
I wanted to go, that's just stupid, but I was just having too much fun. It was just too funny.
I had a ball with that guy. I think he's great. The actor was good. Yeah. Except this part. I forgot about this. Okay, everyone, just hope you haven't eaten recently. This is this is Vladimir doing a little spitting in some face.
Oh, that was disgusting.
It kind of grossed me out, and I captured the whole thing. So here it is in all its glory.
I want to spit once on your head. Just some spittle in your face. What a lunch.
And they really had the actor spit on her face.
Yeah, that wasn't like fake spit. Oh, yeah. That looked real to me.
It was the real deal, man. That scene is like, that's the most controversial thing in a film with a bunch of, you know, nonsense.
Like, I agree. Wow. It's like this. If you're asking me, the actress, all right, take off your top. No problem. Look like you're doing it. Okay. Let this fat, disgusting guy with boils spit in your face. Nope, not in my contract. I'm out of here.
Find someone else.
Yeah, I wouldn't have done it. That was really, really gross. Kind of gross.
I do like the jovial way that he explained what he was going to do and didn't say why. You know?
Yeah.
That was kind of funny, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and also
I got to do it. I can't help myself.
Well, also the way he says, I'm a little spittle. And you can tell just in the way he says spittle that about a quarter cup of saliva just came out of his mouth just then. Oh, we lost Brian.
Oh, Dunlap. Crap. Right when things spit. Let's add him back. let's do that now.
I'm going to spit a little bit on Skype.
Add him back to conference. And I think we're good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what? Oh, there he is.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So Brian heard about spitting and he left.
I did. I said, I'm out. Can't do it.
Can't do it. Well, then maybe you can hang around for 8 seconds of the pain amplifier. Check it out.
Remedy the situation. Restore spice production, or you will live out your life in a pain amplifier.
I just think that sounded like the awesomest threat ever
made.
Sure,
pain is bad, but
no, not the pain amplifier.
I've cut my finger, but in the pain amplifier, it's going to hurt like hell.
Anyway, they never showed the pain amplifier, unfortunately. But
don't have to. All you can do is threaten that you have one, and that's all you really need.
Well, they did swoop in with this crazy kid. Okay, we talked about her before. So Paul has this little sister who comes about through weird means. So far in the books, it doesn't sound like it happened that way. Like, she already existed before he even left to go to Dune and do his thing. I'm not 100% sure about that because I'm not that far in and there's some crazy names and sometimes I get confused. But this little sister has magical properties. She's got the seeing thing that all the women seem to have. And what else? There was something else. Oh, yeah, the voice. They can, like, shake you or whatever.
But she uses hers all the time.
Yeah, and hers was just, I think, probably a little kid with a terrible sounding voice. And they said, all right, dub in some lady doing it. Is my guess, and make her sound young. But here is her freaking out.
My brother is coming with many Fremen warriors.
Impossible.
Not impossible. I told you he is here now.
That is super creepy. I mean, okay, yeah, okay, the voice is kind of creepy. Yeah, we get it. But yeah, if you've seen the movie and seen this little girl and she's looking up for those blue Dune eyes, man, she's freaky.
Also,
I don't understand why they didn't just run or, like, put her over their knee and spank her or something. Like,
yeah,
they're just all sitting around like, oh, it's a little girl, look at this.
Yeah, we're dead. That was weird. The movie never seemed to explain the blue eyes, but the book does. The book explains.
Really?
Yeah,
I thought the movie explained the blue
eyes.
Did
it explain it? Maybe I fell asleep at that part. When did they do that? I don't remember when they did
that. Yeah, Scott, while you were out getting a mouse in the moon sandwich.
Yes.
They said it's during Paul's study where he's once again internally voicing all the things that they need you, the audience, to know about the different people.
Oh.
He says that the exposure to too much spice turns the eyes blue upon blue.
That is probably why I missed it, because I hated those scenes. They would do that and I'd go, oh my, I'd actually audibly yell up here and go, my gosh. Quit talking to yourselves. So I probably missed it. But yeah, it's the melange. The spice did it. So that's it for clips. And my gosh, we're almost done with the show. So we probably should move on to our Film Sack checklist. And
Hey, can I throw out one little bit of trivia, though?
Please do, yes.
Related trivia?
Absolutely. Toto.
The Fat Boy Slim song, Weapon of Choice.
Mm.
That's the one that had the video with Christopher Walken dancing in a hotel lobby.
Oh, Fat Boys. I was thinking of the Fat Boys. Why was I thinking of that? Sorry,
yeah,
go ahead.
It's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a line in that song. A lot of people believe that the whole song is about Dune, but there's a line in there specifically that says, if we walk without rhythm, we won't attract the worm. And it comes right from this film.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I love that song and that video.
You didn't get... You should have got the thump thing too, because that was really cool.
That's awesome.
Hipster dance now.
That's great.
The music from this movie just.
Okay, what? Okay, can we talk about that? Because I actually thought this score was okay. Like, I thought that the battle scenes was punctuated by this music, and I thought that stuff was all right. So, Randy, I'm concerned. Did you not like the...
Okay, now, let me be straight. If you go look at my music collection, you're going to find the Dune soundtrack firmly ensconced in a huge pile of Toto CDs.
Yes, because it's a Toto CD.
I love Toto. I love Steve Lukather. I don't think that he and David Paich and those guys ever did anything wrong. And I also think that the main theme for this film, which was composed by Brian Eno, why he didn't do anything else, I think his big suit had to go to the cleaners, and he can only compose when he's got it. But I think the main theme is good. What bothered me about this film was that every once in a great while, they were like, wait a minute, we've got Steve Lukather here. We got to do a big guitar riff. And that just so ruined it.
Yeah, but that's a good point. Give me a Toto song, a famous one. Can someone think
Africa.
Of Africa? I'm trying to see if I
Africa.
Know it.
You know the song that begins.
The most trite pop song ever played.
Yeah.
Sing it for us again, Brian.
Rosanna.
Oh, it's not the right song.
No.
Wow.
No, Africa. You know Africa.
Oh
I couldn't find it. I don't have a single Toto track.
Boy, she's waiting there for you.
Yeah, I'm totally embarrassed. I don't have a single Toto track.
Dogs cry out in the night.
Wow.
As they grow restless, longing for some solitary.
Some melon.
No one joined me. Three other people.
Oh, is it back?
All right.
No, it's not. That's a whole different Africa. Well, same Africa, but a whole different
song. Well, that's what I did. I searched for Africa and
same
I got
continent, wrong song.
I got the USA for Africa subtitle on that. Anyway, all right. So it is definitely time for our film sack checklist. I've added a new category. I know I keep doing this. I've added title with a double meaning. And it's not even applicable to today's movie.
Dune?
But it will be Dune. In a couple of movies. But Dune does not really have a double meaning. However, barf. No one barfed.
Right.
Oh, jeez. But things are always coming out of people, though.
Yeah. Boobies.
Yeah, pus and spittle.
Any boobies? Don't remember.
No. And I know I say this almost every episode, but this film would have been so much better if it hadn't been such a the men are all at war and the women are Bene Gesserit witches and window dressing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I realize that's the way it was written in the books.
Well, Sean Young's she's not a Bene Gesserit whatever chick.
She was, right, but
she's a Freeman woman.
But you know, like he shows up and she's like, I'm gonna have to kill you. He's like, I'm pretty good looking. Oh yes, you are. I would like to marry you.
He just that was like the anime translation of this movie right there.
Yeah.
Oh, I must date you later. Ah, what? All right.
I was a little uncomfortable during the sting scene.
Yeah.
You did see his boobies.
The Van Halen boobies. I guess we'd count that one because that was pretty gross. And yeah. Since we can count it.
Because they were kind of feminine.
Yeah.
Boobies.
Stings. Boobies.
Sting boobies.
Okay. Jerk character with facial hair. Yes. We're going to give this one to the mustache on Dean. What's his name?
Dean Stockwell. That was my Quantum Leap reference at the beginning.
That
of the show,
was an too. Awesome mustache, too. I mean, that is one of the most recognizable mustaches besides Hitler. You got Hitler and then you got this.
Yeah, true that. Stereotypes. I don't know. It's 10,000 years in the future, but it's basically a Moses story. You know, I mean, that's what this is, at least the film adaptation. It's Moses. It's freeing his people. It's the desert. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's taking control of the worm. Okay, that wasn't in Moses, but still.
The worm is the spice. The spice is the worm.
Black guy dies first. I didn't see any black people.
No, I looked.
Not a single one.
Apparently in the year 10,000, it's kind of, we've all morphed into.
I wonder if it'd be kind of hard to do the blue eyes on the black people maybe. Or
you're such a racist, Brian.
Sounds so wrong.
So nobody like that died first. Decapitation, absolutely. The Baron's nephew. We didn't actually get to see the decapitation, but his head just showed up at the feet of the emperor.
Yeah. And I felt a little uncomfortable after a while. It's like, okay.
Is
somebody going to move that head? I mean, I'm kind of missing the lines here because all I can see is dude's head.
Yeah. And everyone dressed like World War II or World War I German czars.
Yeah,
everywhere.
Well, I mean, Frank Herbert said when he was writing the very first book, the Harkonnens are Nazis. I mean, point blank. Harkonnens, Nazis.
Got it. Which makes sense because that's what everyone does. All the bad guys that are like Imperial Force, whatever, they're always like Nazi types. It's true in Firefly. It's true in everything.
And all the good guys could grow up to be the Messiah.
Yep, that's right.
True. As long as they're clean shaven.
Blue-eyed Messiah. Blue-eyed white guy. Racist. Yeah. let's see. Oh, so we got that Star Trek connection. Let's run them off. We got Patrick Stewart as Captain Jean-Luc Picard. We have Dean Stockwell, who was in Enterprise, and he was also
the one of the Cylons. Damn it!
that was Battlestar Galactica, but yes.
That's right.
We'll count that as well. And then finally, an odd one.
One that I had, but I was wrong.
Oh, well, Jürgen Prochnow.
Prochnow
was in the video game adaptation of Academy, Star Trek Academy.
Oh, wow.
Did a voice. So there you go.
Did they really never get Sean Young into a single Star Trek bit?
She was too crazy. She'd like be obsessed about you and stalk you if you came on there. So Riker would try to turn a corner with his head hung low and his arms waving, and she would follow him. Let's see. Someone peeing? No.
Well, yes.
Well, okay, yeah. Explain your
the
theory
Freeman
here.
Freeman were peeing all the time in those suits.
That's true.
Because they could.
I know you can't tell, but I'm peeing right now.
Exactly.
They would just take dumps and pee in those suits, and then that water or the moisture generated from such acts would be, that's how they stayed alive.
Yeah. Were you guys all bothered by the scene where he's explaining how the suits work and no one asked any questions? Let's say I put a suit on you right now, and a guy came up who was an expert on the suit and said, "So you defecate in this thing, and that gets processed in the thigh bag." What?
You don't say.
What do you mean process? I'm processed because I'm pretty sure I've already processed most of it.
Yeah,
but that doesn't go through the tube in my mouth. What?
Oh, nasty man, nasty. Wilhelm scream. I did not hear Wilhelm scream. But I hear one now.
I thought I did. I thought I heard a bunch during the
worm fight,
the final fight. Yeah, the worm fight at the end with the Atreides and the Harkonnen.
I tried really
hazmat
hard.
Suits.
I really tried to capture it. I always look for those scenes because they're typically the ones where you'll see it, but I couldn't hear one. So
right. Where like people are falling off a sandworm, you'd think that'd be a good time.
It's a perfect time. Yeah. Bad guy with a theme or song, not really in particular. Kenobi type. Probably assign that to Picard. His character is a little rough, around the edges, but still.
It was supposed to be Duncan Idaho, right? In the book, Duncan Idaho is his Kenobi.
Oh,
right?
For sure. And in this, Duncan Idaho was just kind of a waste.
Yeah.
It's kind of a mention, and who cared? Animal or robot is comedy relief. There was no comedy relief.
Laughing.
There was no relief.
Floating vagina man.
Yeah.
We'll count him. Kid named Billy, Bobby, Peter, or Buddy. How about sister? How about Aaliyah as the kid? But let's just go with Paul.
Paul. Yeah, exactly.
He's supposed to be 15 here anyway, so he's still
sure kid. Supposed to be.
How about named Billy, Bobby, Buddy, or Yui? That's a great name, isn't
Yui's
it?
A great name. Yep.
They're always talking about who's the traitor. Is it Dr. Yui? And I was like, isn't that what you do when you're driving down a street and you want to go the other way?
Flip a Yui. Yeah, you flip your Yui. Cave that looks like a vagina? No, but space traveler folder people that do.
Exactly. Pilot guy, yeah.
Yeah, well, I guess you could look at those caves they lived in. But anyway, yeah. Man cave thing that looked like a vagina. How about that? It's that time of the show where we let these fine gentlemen sum up what they think about this movie in a Twitter post that's 140 characters or less. Let's start this time with Brian Faceboil Zibbit.
Dune, a movie that feels as long as the book I've never read looks.
Nice. Randy Sandworm Jordan.
Dune, it's arguably the greatest science fiction novel of all time, so you can't go wrong. Just make the same sort of movie everyone else does, you big jerk.
That's some passion in that. I like it. And then finally, Brian Sting Panties Dunaway.
Dune, finally a movie brave enough to kill Sting. In Dune 2, perhaps we could kill Billy Idol.
Let's do it. For a very long time when I was younger, I thought that was Billy Idol.
Oh, my gosh.
I didn't realize it was actually Sting.
I didn't see that coming. Dunaway just knocked me down.
All right. Well, this is what you, by the way, people, if you walked away, this is while you were out getting your boil suction treatment. So this is what you missed in the fine film of Dune. If you can read people's thoughts, you have to shave your eyebrows just the way it is. Paul is not a name I can take seriously in any movie. I mentioned that already. Someone should tell Grandpa Atreides that he's got stuff on his damn lips.
Oh, that's so disgusting. Yeah.
Everyone's got Kool-Aid lips. It's gross. Is that that's the melange as well, right?
Yeah, once again, it was explained. Yeah, it was explained. The members of the guild, they have the red-stained lips.
Yeah.
Red-stained lips, yeah.
True that. Those black ships look like flying George Foreman grills.
I hate those things.
And then finally, the tooth.
Yes.
And that is what you missed.
Don't do it while Baron Harkonnen is like 3 inches from your face. Wait till he walks across the room and then bust the poison gas tube.
Oh my gosh,
that rotten tooth was so disgusting. And dude, I mean, when they pulled his tooth out and put that one in, I'm like, come on, there's gonna be some blood there.
Yeah, just a little.
Yeah. Nothing.
It's a little disappointing that the traitor turns out to be manipulated by the bad guys. I just want to say straight up, if somebody captures my wife and you know, they're going to kill her anyway. I'm not going to turn on you guys. I mean, I might give my own life to try to set things right, but yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Like, yes,
that trope needs to go away. And I realize this is 25 years ago, but that's just that trope has happened in 24 recently.
Oh, it happens all the time. I hate it.
Yeah.
We may use it tonight. I may threaten to kill one of you. We'll see.
Get your wife if you don't. If you're not funny,
yeah, we'll see how that goes. All right, well, that is going to do it for this episode of Film Sack. Don't forget, we got another movie coming up, the next one right next week. If you stay tuned for next week, this is what you'll see, or you'll want to be seeing. Killer Clowns from Outer Space. That's clowns with a K, kind of like Mortal Kombat. Killer Clowns from Outer Space. We'll be right back here on Film Sack to cover that. Don't forget, in the meantime, you can send your feedback to killerclowns@gmail.com.
You can try that. See what happens.
You can send your feedback to filmsack@gmail.com. Visit the site at filmsack.com. Find us on iTunes. Leave us a review. We'd love that as well. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter. That's Filmsack over on Twitter. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, for Randy, and for all the spice in the world. Oh, you know what? Fletcher said stuff. What am I doing? Fletcher said this.
If we walk without rhythm, we won't attract the worm.
That's right. And more importantly,
the spice must flow.
What? Wait?
The spice must flow.
That's right. So for all of us and to all of you and Scott Fletcher, of course, we'll see you next week.
Shout out, man.
Testicles.
Cry out in the night.
Wow.
As they grow restless, longing for some solitary.
Melon.
No one join me. Three other people.
Oh, it's a nightmare.
All right.
No, that's not. That's a whole different Africa.